Good morning, Mr. TK. Remember that?
It's 12 o'clock. It's good afternoon.
It's good afternoon, everyone.
Whatever you want to say it is.
Buddy,
Sunday. It's not a live show. Most importantly, it's
Thank
not a live show.
God, it is We're not back. A live show. We are to back routine. To the routine in the studio. And wow, do we have a guest today, TK?
One of my favorite guests, you know? I mean, everybody's really my favorite guest, but you know what? This guy, he's always been there at the top of the list.
Well, I'll
Every
be honest.
Every time he comes on, I always enjoy the conversation, where it goes, what I learned, and what the viewers like.
Yeah. I mean, when he first came on the scene, I feel like I didn't like him. Because he was very negative and I didn't want to hear it.
It's against the grain.
I had a property.
What you're saying is against the grain, man. You got to go with the grain.
It's not even against the grain. I mean, look who you're talking to. I mean, if you want to go against the grain, it's kind of harder to go harder against the grain than this guy. But like, he was not saying what I wanted to hear at the moment, and it was making me crazy, right? But like,
be honest,
you know, he's one of those guys that grew on me because my bias and disdain from that bias turned into, hey, I guess this guy kind of knows what he's talking about, right?
You know, the difference between our platform here that we have and like the mainstream sack is the mainstream, they get to dictate who is saying what and who hears what.
Yeah,
right?
People because, watch them.
Well, bottom line is they get to tell you what they want you to hear, and then they play it at a time that you have to listen to it. You don't really have a choice. But with YouTube, if you don't like what somebody's saying, you don't listen to them. So therefore, whoever gets the views
no one has any sense
is clearly here. What the people want to hear. And he's getting the views.
He is getting the views.
The bottom line, the people have spoken. Sure. We can't say, one thing or the next. At the end of the day, the views will tell everybody who really wants to be heard by the Canadian public.
That's true. So, TK, I mean, it's a little slow right now because it's Christmas and New Year's, and at least in my part of the industry, like, everybody is away on vacation right now and not doing a goddamn thing. So it's really hard to kind of move things forward from a development perspective, at least with the team I'm using. But I'm pretty sure this is universal in the industry.
It is. Everybody's like, I'll get back to you in like 4-day timeline type right now.
They're all on a beach, most of them.
They're all on a beach, like, and they're just like, you know, you got the message. That you know that they received your message when you received it, but they were just like, I got more important things. And they replied to you 4 days later.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to use a team that comprises of people that have been fairly successful in this industry. So they have the resources to disappear for the good part of a month when it comes to this time of year, which is really annoying because
just
I generally
really work in your favor. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's because I'm cheap, because I'm not really cheap, but I hate spending three times the amount on a vacation at Christmas time. So I generally go not during Christmas time. I wait till everybody comes back from New Year's, and then I generally go away because the price is a fraction and I get to go to the exact same place. And like, I don't really care about my kids being in school or not being in school for a little while. So,
but traveling myself this year for the first time for Christmas, I can honestly say it's way better. So guys, thanks for watching today. If you haven't yet, drop us a like, comment, and subscribe. Hit the bell and be like Don, you know, get another YouTube account and double subscribe.
Double subscribe, you know, like Don.
You're telling everybody else to subscribe. Well, have you double subscribed?
D is for double subscribe like Don.
Are you a real estate agent and you're looking to make a change? Anywhere in Ontario, guess what? We're hiring. Franklin & Associates, number one team in the GTA for all RE/MAX teams. Number one team for all teams from all companies for number of units sold. Throughout Toronto. So if you're looking to make a change, best decision I ever made was to join Franklin Associates. Go to jointeamleo.com and we can set up a call.
Well, it is nice if I mean, but you cannot get anything done here because everybody else is gone. That's the point. And exactly. I'm always here so I'm and I'm always trying to get
time,
stuff
done. You're
not
done. Doing anything anyways, right? No, the market's not moving. But the market is moving. I mean, the market, you got people right now who are doing stuff. You got people right now who are calling us who are like, we're ready to list. You got people who are anxious to buy. There's a huge amount of activity around Christmas, like there is every year. Toronto Real Estate Board released their stats. We ended up about shy of 70,000. So I think it was closer to 65,000 transactions for the year in 2023, right? So I think it was 12% down from total transactions the year before, which I think is
in Toronto.
More, on the Toronto Real Estate Board, like MLS. So those properties could be anywhere. But the more important thing is just like that activity level, you know, like what has changed, right? And obviously there's a bunch of people who aren't going to be transacting because of interest rates. Like that's just the bottom line. You know, those could be investors, speculators, first-time buyers. There's all sorts of people that would say, okay, interest rates are just too high. But there's still 65,000 transactions, which means that there's a buyer and a seller, right? So not everybody's buying and selling twice. We won't say 130,000 people because a lot of those people had bought and sold at the same time. So I don't know. We'll say like half. So let's call it like 30 something thousand. So 100,000 people still had to move and to make a decision, whether it's to sell the property, buy a property, whatever it was. 100,000 people. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of business. That's a lot of opportunities for people to, you know, do what they need to do in an industry. It's a healthy real estate industry statistic.
But it's healthy compared to other cities and other places on the planet, but compared to what we're used to, it feels dead, right?
Yes.
And that's just the way that it is right now. And that's the way that it might be for a little while. But interest rates are definitely playing a part, but I think sentiment is really like what I've learned over the last few years is that interest rates are a factor for sure, but that sentiment mixed with the interest rates is gigantic. And people are still kind of like hemming and hawing out there. There's definitely not like this gung-ho atmosphere that we had the last time things paused, right? When things paused last time, everybody's like, hey, good times are here again. Let's go, let's go, let's go. And everybody
government did this, okay? Here's the thing about, you know, economists, right? When they're all trying to give you their predictions and stuff like that, it's always about all other things being equal, right? So, you know, if everything stayed the same, then this is what I think would happen. But if this scenario happened, if the government made an announcement today and said that, you know, quantitative easing would commence again in 2025 and that they would drop rates back down to near zero, and that they were going to open up the immigration floodgates so that we would be bringing in twice as many people, and that they weren't going to help the building industry whatsoever to build any more properties, and that they were going to continue, you know, status quo, and we would be having a housing supply shortage going forward. A bunch of people would say, oh my God, next year is going to be crazy. I better get in the market. I better buy soon. I better make sure that I've got a piece of real estate, because next year, if the government does all those things, you know, we're going to see a pandemonium again. And they would say, well, I don't care what the interest rates are now. They'll be cheaper next year. And I don't care what the prices are now, because they'll be more next year. And the sentiment would change and they'd all start buying. Now, that's not going to happen again. But it's just an example of like how powerful sentiment is.
Why won't it happen again?
What I'm saying is the government's not going to announce that and people aren't going to do that. It's a totally fictitious story. What I'm just trying to emphasize is that the sentiment is going to be the most, like, the guiding indicator. The sentiment is going to be the one that's going to say, go left, go right. And right now, the sentiment is real estate sucks. Don't buy it. It's bad. It's going down. You're in trouble. You're an idiot. If you buy it today, it's going to go down lower and everyone's going to laugh at you and say, why did you buy when everyone told you not to buy? I told you so. You must be dumber than other people.
You bought it when things were 20% down from peak. You're an idiot.
Oh my God. Oh my God. My friend bought a house yesterday. It was $300,000 over asking. They lined up at the house. They outbid everybody. They paid $400,000 more than what the people just bought it for 2 years ago. They are so smart. They got into the real estate market. You guys should buy too right now. That's how the conversations were back in 2021 and 2022. Those are the conversations. Oh, we lost three in a row, but then our realtor told us, just The last guy bought it for $1 million. What's the difference?
Go.
It was like a week earlier, but we went in at 1.1 because the market had gone up that much in a week.
So no, and it doesn't even matter. Like, pay whatever. Yeah, pay whatever because
and our payments
like,
are
next year.
Low.
Yeah. Next year it'll be worth 200,000 more, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So who cares? So pay whatever.
I'm pretty sure we made money already at 100 grand a week. Like, it's been at least like 3 days, so we're up like 30 grand.
I think we're fine. I think we're gonna be okay.
And everyone would say, oh, "You're so smart."
We're gonna be okay. And you know what? We listened to our realtor, and we got a variable rate mortgage too. So good times are ahead for us.
And he bought us a barbecue afterwards. So when we moved in, he got us this great barbecue. It has like the ability to go from natural gas to
he bought us a
propane.
Roomba.
Or he bought us a Roomba. Yeah. Right? Like, this guy, he's such a sweetheart.
That's right. You know? Good just times are the money's flowing. The Roombas are flowing.
Everything's good. Seriously, Best Buy. I got a Best Buy gift card.
And now the best is that I get a monthly newsletter in the mail. Right?
Of course. You got to know when's it a good time to sell?
When's it a good time to sell again? When is a good time to sell again? Well, it seems like now is not a good time to sell. And it seems like now is not a good time to buy. So I guess there's a lot of unhappy people out there in every single transaction because, the alarm went off, TK. It's time to sub to the channel, everybody.
Don't forget.
Don't forget, guys, to sub.
Please. We need more subscribers.
Yeah, we didn't even hit 6,000 yet. This is pathetic.
We celebrated 6,000 subscribers as if we were going to get it from the last show. I'm pretty sure we went down in subscribers.
We went down.
Like,
again.
Guys, come on.
Thank you.
We flew all the way out to Calgary today to talk to our guest. And
who
all
is
we need
not here yet.
All we need from you guys is a subscribe, a like, a comment, a subscribe, anything that, you know, your little fingers can maintain.
Yeah, like, comment, subscribe. I'm double subscribed. Do it yourself. Didn't get to fix the show, though.
Please subscribe. And,
well,
what were we even talking about?
Sentiment. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so this is kind of weird because people say to me, Daryl, like, you're pretty negative on your show. And meanwhile, you know, you just bought a property. What the hell's wrong with you? Are you crazy? And, you know, it's hard to respond to that because sometimes I feel the same way. Like, what am I crazy? But the reality is that sometimes in markets like this, if you know what you're doing, you can find a great friggin' deal. Mm. And so I had no choice, TK. The reality is that this deal that we bought, it was so friggin' good that, like, every indicator said it doesn't matter what's going on in the market, right? And then the fact that we got it financed, right, by a whole bunch of people with a whole bunch of money indicated the same thing, that this thing is fantastic, right? Because there's a lot of deals that fell flat in the last little while or couldn't come up with the money that they
all
needed,
the deals,
right? I would not say basically all, but like most of them needed some crazy creative financing and VTBs.
Unless it was backed by somebody who had a big chunk of change and they were ready to be able to put that development on no matter what and could weather the storm, it wasn't getting done. If they were going to somebody else in order to be able to get financing, like a third party, the third party wasn't financing them. All the deals that I know about were all vendor takebacks.
All vendor takebacks are crazy long closings.
Or assuming a mortgage that was already in place. Right.
And,
but even that is still like those people who are, I got one that I'm working on. The lender isn't excited to be able to transfer the mortgage. Like, they're not like, oh, please, we'll, you know, whoever you have who wants to take over this mortgage, we're happy. They're like, no, we got the mortgage. And unless you bring us somebody with net worth that we're happy with in order to be able to transfer this over to, we're not transferring it.
No, it's always like that.
So it's like, you know, you've got a really, you know, small pool of people in order to be able to take over millions of dollars in debt, right? So these are the things that you have to understand.
Comfortably.
Deals that are happening right now. So I called somebody, a deal me and you were working on, and I called the agent. I said, hey, how's it going? You know, happy new year. Maybe I didn't say happy new year. Maybe it's right before the holidays, but I was like, happy holidays. And I said, what's going on in the market, you know, just to kind of feel them out, because, you know, really, I know that we're trying to buy the property and that we're trying to get it for a good deal. And we've been working on it for a long time, and that I wanted to know. I knew already the answer, which was like, nobody's calling this guy telling him that they're interested in that site. I know that already, but I just asked him and he was just like, nothing. Nothing is happening at all. There's no sales. We're not doing any transactions whatsoever. And, you know, obviously his business is very flat. If you're selling land, that's, you know, you're not moving anything right now. Right. So we had a little conversation about it and he told me that he'd get back to me. He never did, which is like normal for guys like that. Right. They just don't get back to you. But anyways, long story short, even him, whose best interest would be to tell me, oh, yeah, lots of calls right now. Yeah, people are interested in that property. Are you guys still interested? You know, we can get it sold. You know,
yeah.
He was just like, nothing. Now, there's nobody out there buying whatsoever. There's no transactions.
Yeah.
And I was like, I knew it.
Listen, you can tell it's New Year's by the volume of people calling me right now with deals that, like, we're on the back burner, you know, or that I feigned some form of interest in at some point.
Yeah.
Everybody's New Year's resolution was to like hit that list hard and get things back on track for 2024. So I'm getting all these calls of all these deals I looked at a year ago, year and a half ago, that are like, this guy calls me last week and he says they really want to sell. Like, they really want to sell now. And I was like, okay, well, like, did their price come in line with the idea of really selling now? Because it's kind of worse than last time we spoke. And like, I wasn't so interested before. So what's different now, right?
Yeah.
And nothing is really that different now.
It's just something you say.
Well, it's a different lead in. You know, they really want to sell is very different than like,
they'll do anything they can to make this work.
Well, they don't really need to sell.
I put together those two land deals, or the two lots for a builder, right? And so that was this week. And the one guy said to me, I'm very motivated. He's the agent selling his own property. I'm very motivated to sell. Very motivated to sell. And so that's, I brought him an offer.
Hit. Yeah.
You know, it's like what was he asking? So 250K under asking. And he was just like, no, we can't do that. He's just like, I can only take this number. And I was just like, you aren't motivated to sell. How, like, why would you call me and tell me that you're very motivated to sell when you're actually not motivated to sell? And he was just like, well, I'm just going to keep it unless I can get the price that I want.
Agents are the best at that.
Right? I was just like,
agents are the best.
You're motivated to sell. You literally called me to say, I'm really motivated to sell. It's the complete opposite of being motivated to sell. Now, this property, so he lost a little bit of money because he had just bought it. So we had to pay him a little bit more than we wanted to, but it was less than what he wanted. But the other property, they listed it at 1.5 because the last sale was.
Well, you muted yourself. Yeah, you're good.
My son's got this like auto clicker thing on the computer.
You're pressing the space bar or something.
I don't know.
I gotta edit this in.
No, it's okay. This is natural. And so the last property that sold in April 2022 was 1.5, the same lot. Mm-hmm.
April 22. That's like,
right.
Not so, the same market as now.
And so, exactly. And so we bought it at 1.1. So it's $400,000 under what the, peak price was.
400,000 below peak, man.
400,000 below peak.
Holy shit.
So you can see why that person was, you know,
but that's like, that's like 33-35% under peak,
maybe like 25, something like that. But whatever, it's still a big number,
yeah. Third off,
still a big number, and this is what it is, right? So these are the type of things that are out there. And so the builder is going to build two houses and make sense of it. Now, the point of the story was the agent actually sent me afterwards. He goes, oh, I've got these other properties as well.
Yeah.
Right. And this one here, he got so lucky on that we even existed and that we were willing to buy his property. Right. So I'm like, yeah. Send them to me anyways. The guy's got a couple more on like a busier street that are like nowhere near anything that we're looking for. But again, at those same prices that he paid, like he just went and he just was like, oh, the market's, you know, I'm going to make lots of money.
This is an agent?
And I'm just going to buy all these properties. And
wow.
Like, he would easily be down $1 million in total.
And you know that his plan was to like buy them and then double end them like a year later
and sell them for like, you know, not like $3 million and build and all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, I just felt bad for him. I told him, I said, look, I'm really sorry you're in this position. I said, geez. But guys, that's what guys were doing. They were just doubling down. The market was going up and they were just like, I'm going to buy as many properties as I can. The worst was the pre-construction guy. So I went to go see him and I think I already told the story, but it was a new build. It had closed already. And so he's trying to sell it himself. So he calls us and says, look, I can't sell it myself. I don't know what to do here. My partners are all mad at me. Help me. So I go in there and I look at the property and we went over everything. And
there's another realtor.
What we could do. He's another realtor. And so I said, oh, you know, it's a tough situation. You know, here's really where the numbers are. You know, like you got to figure out a way to carry this or to sell it at a loss. I mean, just the way it was. Mm-hmm. And so he says, I got six of these.
Six. Oh, this is that guy?
Yeah.
He was a realtor, this idiot?
He was a realtor. I got six of these. My mortgage payments are like $25,000, $30,000, whatever it was, a month.
But you know he was trying to like front run that deal and like get in and grab a bunch and flip them like.
Yeah.
Right?
So these are the, right? So not only is there going to be a bunch of realtors, because based on 65,000 sales, that's not a lot of sales for people to go. You can go 1 year without making the same amount of sales. You know, like you can leverage all your credit cards. You can do all of your line of credits. You can use all your savings. You can sell a couple properties.
You can
do, okay, but I'm saying the successful guys are also having problems. The guys have been around for 15 years who were making like $500,000 in the good old days. They were like, wow, look at me. And now all of a sudden they're making $100,000.
You see them at Money Mart.
Cover their, you know, like fixed expenses every single month. Those guys will last a year. And now going into 2024, if those sales don't pick up, there's going to be a lot of realtors who will suffer on the income side. And then because they all invested in real estate, like a bunch of dummies, they all just, as much money as they could pile together, they were all just buying. Yeah. Buying.
I know
they're going to take a bunch of hits there too, and they can't carry those private loans anymore. No.
I know a guy who lends money to a lot of realtors, you know, that are waiting for their next score, right?
Yeah.
But you know, we've been talking lately, and it's very dangerous waters these days because you don't know if they're going to get the next score anymore. It was a very wonderful, lucrative business a few years ago when you had a pretty good feeling that, you know,
like commission advances or like
basically commission
before they've even made the commission. Cause that's, that's another one.
It starts as commission advances and slowly it's transitioned into like, can I borrow $20,000 for 6 months? Right.
Yeah.
Because there's no advance to give.
Yeah.
And these are guys that thought that the good times would never stop, right? Never stop, and spent money like drunken sailors and played the part, you know, and, you know, they didn't save enough for a rainy day or a lot of these guys, you know, a lot of it's in their house, right? A lot of their wealth is in their house. So it's either line of credit, money on the street, or sell that thing. And we all know how great a time it is to sell that thing, right? Plus, there's pride. These guys don't want to sell their house in this market. That shows. They'd rather go pay 5% a month than to sell their house or sell their car and look like an idiot to their nobody even gives a shit, right? Yeah. But like they think they do. Our guest is here, TK. The time has come. The show can get better now. Thank goodness.
I thought the show was going well. It's okay. But it might get better from here on, guys.
Generally, it goes well when it's just the two of us. But we're lucky enough to have Mr. Luke here from Market Mania, which is one of the top Canadian, I don't even know. I don't think he's real estate. He talks about real estate.
International man of mystery.
This guy is like, I don't even know if he's Canadian. He doesn't sound very Canadian. That's for damn sure.
He's Canadian as they come.
But I don't even know if he's in Canada.
Look at his background. It's so much better than ours.
I know. I was watching his video the other day, and there's like a thunderstorm in the background, you know, just to make it scarier what he's
background
talking
guy.
About.
Because
it's not
guy.
Scary enough what the hell he's
Work
talking
on the background's
about,
right? Background guy.
Somehow it ended up on his calendar at the wrong time, and he was grocery shopping, which means he's wealthy, right? Because he can afford groceries. In Canada.
Oh my God.
Can I hear you?
There he is. There he is. Can you hear us?
Finally. I'm so sorry. It's all my fault. Like, what a total disaster getting started this morning.
No worries.
We're good.
Man. We're glad you ended up joining us because we were talking about a guest at the beginning. And then we've it's been really notorious for talking up a guest and then there's no guest ever.
Especially on the live show. That would be brutal. But on today's live show. We're good.
Yeah, thanks.
What's happening? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you guys too. I'm so sorry again for that. My fault entirely.
No problem. Thank you for having your good mic and not joining from like your phone like some people do. That's the most annoying thing ever, TK. When you have like a known podcaster or like YouTuber who you know has the great equipment, and then they come on our show with like no earphones and like a phone, not even a microphone. That's the best. Well, Luke from Market Mania, the fastest growing YouTuber on earth, I feel. How are you today?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
Oh my God. Thanks for joining us.
We were talking just before you came on earlier on. We said, you know, with the mainstream media, people get to decide, you know, what channel they listen to. But at the end of the day, the content is going to be given to them the way that the media wants it. But on YouTube, you've got that opportunity to be able to go and look at all the different people and personalities and what their content is. And you get to decide who you want to listen to. And then that will determine who's actually getting the views or not, you know, not the producers. Right. And so the fact that you're getting all these views and that people are listening, it means that people like what you're putting out there. The bottom line, whether it's what people want to hear or not, at the end of the day, the people decide. And right now the people are saying, we want more Market Mania.
We want more Market Mania, like as much as we can get. He's doing live streams and then they come out. He's killing it. He's absolutely killing it. And like, take this the right way. And I said it before you came on, but like when you first came on the scene, I was not happy about the stuff you were saying because I was personally in a position where I had to get out of a property and I didn't want to hear anything about the market coming down. And so you struck a nerve with me, right? And so when you first came on the scene, I was like, this guy, he doesn't know what he's talking about. This guy's crazy. This guy's all
just went up doom and gloom. Last week. What does he know?
Right. And so, you know, it turns out that you, of course, know what you're talking about. And it's not a great outlook for this country from your perspective. And it hasn't been a great outlook from your perspective for a while. Now, I just want to throw in a caveat because with people like you that point out the obvious, which, I mean, don't get me wrong. I agree that this is a disaster bomb and it should have crashed a long, long time ago. But you're forecasting and prognosticating in a rigged environment, right? Mm-hmm. So like guys like you and guys like Peter Schiff and guys like Robert Kiyosaki have been saying for, you know, the last 20 years, this is doomed. This is a disaster. This is going to crash. This is going to crash. And then we don't see those gigantic crashes. It's not because, you know, you guys don't know what you're talking about. It's because they pull the rug out from underneath you all the time, right?
Yeah, well, I don't even think it's that. I mean, if you just think about, Daryl, like over the past 10, 15 years, how the standard of living in Canada has absolutely collapsed, regardless of what the government has tried to do. I mean, just go to any downtown area. And this is just a thing. I want to highlight that if you travel, I mean, I travel a lot, and you don't see this in other places. I mean, you see it in the US too. But like you say, that's a rigged environment as well. But you just don't see homeless people everywhere in places like Mexico, even in Central America, even in developing countries. You just don't see the same level of what we're seeing, which is like a mental health crisis coupled with like an opioid crisis, coupled with like a homelessness crisis, which is just getting worse and worse and worse. So to your point, like, yeah, I mean, it is a rigged environment, and more of my videos this year, like, I'm not really making any forecasts. I think the biggest risk this year is government stupidity. And I think if people are wishing for that, I mean, look what's happened over the past 10, 15 years, and there's your example of what's going to happen. So things will get worse as a result of being in this rigged environment. I actually think, contrary to what most people think, if the government just actually did nothing and just let free markets correct and do the work. I mean, you're already seeing interest rates come down. The Bank of Canada hasn't done anything, but interest rates are coming down. That's because they don't control everything. But let's say the whole interest rate curve was not controlled by them. We would have had interest rates going up in 2021, right? We didn't have them go up until 2022, just way too late. And we would have them coming down right now. So the boom bust cycle is like being enhanced by these central planners who just think that they can be the puppeteer and just control everything because they're smarter than everybody else, when they're in fact stupider because they're more disconnected than everybody else from the real world. I mean, Trudeau, Freeland, the Bank of Canada, do you think they live in the real world?
Not even close. I mean, what'd you say? They had two private jets for his trip to Jamaica.
Yeah, the
right?
One plane. Like,
that's
broke
normal,
down.
Right?
Yeah.
Can't fit enough of them on one private jet. What the fuck is going on? But it's really true, right? And then on top of everything you said, I mean, just imagine that's likely going on without all the crazy immigration, with just like normal immigration levels. And TK, do you remember we used to be like, what? They're talking about bringing in 400,000 people a year? That's crazy, right? And then it was like, hold on.
Listen, I remember 200, 250. That was a big number. We used to say that to clients. We'd be like, do you know, like this would be like a buyer script, right? So you're talking to a buyer who says, no way, you know, I heard the market's going to go down. This is like 2015, right? Mm-hmm. We'd be like, well, do you know that Canada's scheduled to bring in over 200,000 people next year? Where are those people going to live?
Where are they going to live?
Right? We're not building enough houses for 200,000 people. The market's going up. It can only go up from here, right? And then people would be like, oh, 200,000 people? Do you know that 42% of them are going to move to the GTA? You know? And people would be like, oh my God, you're right. I need to pay $30,000 over asking. Make an offer for 410. All right, I'll do it. You know, that was back then.
410. Oh my God, what a low number. That's right? Insanity. 410 for a house in Toronto. That's crazy. Yeah.
These are the things that have changed now. So what's going to be the government saying? You said that you believe that the government is going to be able to screw this up on their own. So what are they going to do?
I just think we'll see a repeat, kind of, not exactly the same. I don't think it will be as big, but you never know. It could be with this government we have right now. But I think we'll see a repeat. I think we're just going to see more government stimulus. I think government stimulus is now going to be the way forward that the government chooses to prop up the economy, because there's no stigma attached to it. And that's
UBI?
Part of the drive. Not UBI. They don't even have to do that. I mean, they sort of tried that.
Aren't they talking a lot about that?
Well, yeah, but I mean, UBI, we already sort of have it to a certain extent. If you think of like unemployment insurance, I mean, it's not like everybody can get it and setting like a minimum level.
Yeah,
but
I don't get that.
I think there's a lot of opposition to that. So I don't think they would do that. I just think it's more going to be like trying to prop up the economy through different stimulus programs. And,
easing type of stuff.
Well, not even that. I mean, we may see that, but I think if you see like the Conservative government come in, they wouldn't do quantitative easing because they believe like there's a stigma attached. And you've had like Pierre, for example, campaign around that. Oh, they printed all this money. But I was looking at the deficits yesterday, and you know, the deficits went up when the Conservatives got in charge in 2008 because the economy was in a poor state of affairs. So you just saw that more extreme in 2015 with Trudeau. I mean, they just went up anyway. But 2015, we nearly hit a recession there. And I just think more government stimulus is on the way. And I think, but the problem I have, and maybe you guys can share some insight, this is a great thing about talking to other people, is I'm like, even if they do that, though, I don't see how it will work, because you're just going to get more inflation down the road, even higher rates. And we've seen this like cycle play out before in the past, in the 70s. And it just ends up with higher and higher rates until you get to somebody who eventually has the balls to just completely smash it up, which is sort of like what we're having right now in the US with the Federal Reserve there. But I don't think the Bank of Canada has any balls. I think they'll probably cut before the Fed.
Are we big enough to have our own balls? Like, can we even really make that choice on our own? Or is it not made from like the central banks that actually matter? Like, there's no people.
What do you think would be enough to stimulate? Like, where do you think rates would need to go down to in order to stimulate? Like, are you talking about like they would go back down to 0.25% overnight rate? Do you think that they just lower the rate by, you That's know, crazy, 25, bro. 50 basis points just to make everyone feel good? Like, what do you think is like the stimulus?
Yeah, I think they'd have to take rates way down again, like to, you know, 25 basis points or whatever. And I don't know if that'll happen. I really hope it doesn't happen, because I think you would see like almost a double bottom in rates. I mean, you see these on like stock charts, and they're psychological patterns which happen, and there's reasons why they happen. When you've got a central bank that is manipulating the interest rates, obviously there's psychology involved with that. So I think you could see a double bottom in rates where they go down again. And I think that would absolutely just rip apart the entire, like that would be completely the end in terms of this bubble, because basically I think at that point you would have a lot of people get fooled into it, and then the rug would be pulled out again when inflation starts to rise. And that's even if that happens, because in 2020, we didn't really have a financial crisis going on. If you think about it, there was a bond market route back then with corporate debt, but it wasn't really like a financial crisis with the consumer. Right now, we have like a financial crisis with the consumer. We've got all these people in these dodgy mortgages. I've been speaking to my buddy Todd Sachs, who owns a brokerage in Maryland in the United States, and he went through the 2008 real estate bubble and everything like that. And he was talking to me like, back then, lenders were doing forbearance, but people were just taking that money, saving it. And then by the time the bank came and foreclosed on that house, because they would never end up paying, even when they did like the forbearance and basically were allowed to not pay their mortgage, they go to the house, it would be empty. They just literally pocketed all the money because they'd lost their job. So I don't know what's really going to happen. It could be quite a mess, even if they drop rates. I do really think that this bubble has started to unravel.
Because we've been talking about it for so long, it kind of feels like I'm just kind of brainwashed to say, well, it's not going to be this time. Like, I had a client ask me the other day and said, like, is the recession going to start this year? Like, boldly, just like, is the recession going to start? And I said, well, since I got into the business, like, every year it's been the recession's going to be this year, you know? So it's like, nobody really knows when it's going to happen. So that's why when you keep, it's not that I don't believe it. It's like, I hear it. I see it. I like all the facts are there. Like, we've just built this thing into something that's completely unsustainable. It's a big house of cards. And like, it's so obvious,
but this
is just each and every time that we get so close and that this is supposed to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, it just doesn't happen. And that we just carry on. So like, I'm just programmed to basically say to myself, like, I don't know what it is that's going to happen. I don't know what it is that's going to avoid all the, you know, the worst things, the power of sale crisis, the hyperinflation, whatever you can come up with, which is the doomsday. I'm always like, it's not going to happen because Canada is going to find a way out of it. And there is a big difference between our banking system and other banking systems. The quality of our credit, in my mind, from what I know, is a much higher level than in a lot of other places. Now,
a lot of other places. Yeah.
There's also a lot better credit markets out there. Some countries out there to get a mortgage is very difficult. Canada is relatively easy when you look at
Canada,
other countries.
Canada figured it out. Okay. And this is the crazy thing. I drove by Yorkdale Mall yesterday on the highway, and the parking lot is packed to the tits. Okay. Like, you could not go in there and find a spot. And because, okay, there is a recession. We've been in it for a while, but when you throw this many more people that have some money, it dilutes the whole pool, but it also creates this like false sense of demand that wasn't there, right? When you bring a million more buyers into the pool, some of them, and it seems like enough of them, will be able to keep the market relatively propped up, right? And it's not because the economy's doing better. It's because we've brought in more buyers that have the ability to buy in the current environment, have the ability to borrow at the current interest rates. Maybe they come from a place where, you know, they're super wealthy, and here maybe they're somewhat average, but now they can buy a house at 4.9% interest rates or 5.25% interest rates, and they can buy all the shit at the mall, right? They can buy stuff because there's all this money, while other people are looking for heated tents on Amazon, right? Because their best hope is to sleep outside for the next 3 months and hope they survive and then figure it out.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that really, like any recession, and a lot of people forget this, is the recession starts with those at the bottom of the scale, and it works its way up. And people who are wealthy, they're actually the worst when it comes to adjusting their lifestyle down. They just won't do it. They struggle to comprehend that they're going to have to do it. Whereas people at the bottom, they're forced into it first. So I think, like, as the recession progresses, it just begins to affect more and more people. And down the road, you'll see those people affected. And the people don't have the money. I mean, we're drawing down savings and credit is going up. So to your point about the mall, yeah, there's loads of people at the mall, but they're all spending it on credit. They don't have that money. The average, I can't remember what the number is, but if you look at the number, the average amount of money that somebody has coming to Canada, it's insanely low. And then the other thing is, through the channel I've had, and this was all like in my mind before the channel and everything like that, I came to the conclusion that there has to be a fraud component to this market and to this banking system.
But a little bit, yeah.
But through the channel, like, I've now heard from people on the inside who say it's not just a little problem, it's a massive problem. And you even hear from like the credit bureaus, like Equifax, TransUnion, that the mortgage fraud didn't just go up last year. It constituted like over 50% of all fraud types, which is just insane when you think of the large amounts of money people are buying into these markets at. Like, they're huge amounts. So I disagree on the point that the banking system is solid, because that's like a false sense of security that everybody gets into before a bubble bursts, unfortunately. Like, if you'd asked, in fact, you don't even have to ask, it's all out there in the US before 2008. And I know it's different. It is different structurally. Like, we haven't got liar loans, at least I don't think, and things like that. But we have other dodgy mortgages that are going to do the exact same thing. And when you also go back to 2008, and I believe that's what you have to do. You have to look at another bubble when it bursts, like Japan or the Great Financial Crisis. And you have to kind of draw those parallels and see what's similar, even if in some ways they're different. And I look at like the loans. I mean, 2008, most people believe that was a subprime crisis. It actually wasn't. Most of the foreclosures were prime. This report came out in 2015 by the MBER. I've covered it many times. I think I even covered it this week on my channel. But the thing is, that report, it actually says how most of the foreclosures, contrary to popular belief, contrary to The Big Short and all these movies, were prime borrowers. But the thing is, it started in subprime. And it's like I said, that's where it's always going to start. If you think about it logically, the recession is always going to hit those with the least amount of money first, the riskiest buyers first. It's always going to hit those people with the private lenders. But eventually, it's going to trickle down to everybody else. And who's your main buyer is the prime borrower with good credit. But the thing is, even if you've got good credit, good job, and you've got a couple of investment properties, if you're leveraged and your renters suddenly stop paying and you can't kick them out, you can
lose your job.
Run into Yeah, you can run into trouble really fast. And that's what happened in 2008. Like a lot of these markets, people had investment properties. They thought this is a safe thing. Renting out a house, it's safe. But in reality, in a recession, it's far from safe. And I think any landlord getting into the game is foolish. And believe me, like the dumb money doesn't stop flowing. It just changes where it goes. Like, I mean, you want to see dumb money come to Calgary because all these Ontario landlords are rushing in, like buying 90% of the condos. I know one person who works up in Airdrie, a master plan community, and another guy who works down in the south through the channel again. And they're saying like 90% of the buys for condos are from Ontario.
Yeah.
And I even heard from a buyer this week from Ontario, I put it on Twitter, who bought a condo because he caved into FOMO from Ontario. And then he tried to rent it out, realized there was no way he was getting the rents that he was told by the realtors and everybody else. And the credit quality of the people he was getting was horrible. So he sold that. And then his realtor said, yeah, the buyer was another buyer from Ontario. So they're just trading assets. They're trading tokens. It is like dumb, drunk people in Vegas at a poker table. I mean, if you want to beat people at poker easily, go to Vegas and go there at like 2 a.m. sober. And it's easy because everyone's pissed up and it's just anyway. I'm giving.
So is
away
that
my
Calgary
secret.
Right now? It's like the guys.
That's how he's making all his money. That's where he's gonna go. Yeah, I think you're totally right about the a lot of the points, especially about the subprime. I believe that the majority would have been prime mortgages because then the problem was exacerbated, and then at that point the value of your home was so low, and that those foreclosure options were there to just drop your keys in the mailbox and walk away because you were like, there's no equity in this house anymore. Your 20-30-40% equity disappeared on you, right?
Yeah. That was a government program, by the way, TK. Cash for keys.
So it was a government program that said...
Yeah, that was like a government program to get people out. It was basically... So it wasn't like the lenders giving that money. It was the government.
The government. Okay, I didn't know that. But that's what it was. That's what they were doing. They were walking away.
Yeah, but they were walking
away. Putting the keys in the mailbox and saying...
A little bit of equity. Yeah, not like now. Like the
sometimes
average...
no equity.
Well, they had
negative.
That.
Some of them were negative equity.
But they had at some point when they bought it. They
when
had
they first
equity,
bought,
right?
Sure.
Right, but now you're walking away. If you have a place in Toronto, like it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's a different decision than back, you know, in the 80s when you were walking away from, you know, 50 grand on your $250,000 house, which might have been a lot of money back then. But I think it's a different decision when you're like thinking
prices in
hundreds.
Canada are higher too. Yeah. The only reason I say about the Canadian banking system, because like I'm not working at the banks. I know what it takes to get qualified for my clients. I know what it takes for every mortgage I've ever gotten. I remember I tried to find somebody who could do one of these Brampton mortgages one time, and I couldn't find anybody. I asked realtors.
You
I even
didn't
asked
try
realtors
very
from Brampton.
Hard, believe
they
me.
All said no. Nobody knew where to find it. So in my mind, I was like, this must not be that easy to find, and that it must not be that openly out there. Maybe because of the color of my skin or because of my name
try
or
hard enough.
Because my reputation or something. Everyone was like, don't tell TK.
Don't tell TK. Yeah. What the hell? You're going to ruin the whole thing.
They're trying to take me down. But again, so like to get a mortgage in Canada, it's very difficult if you're going through the traditional means. It isn't like you just go to a broker and then at the end they go, you know what, you're not qualified. But if you go through door number three, we'll be able to get you a mortgage. Door number three is private loans, which you touched on. Our subprime mortgages are private loans in Canada. That's what they are.
There's
those
door 3B where you go hire a dude to make you some paperwork that looks legit and you get it through an A lender and they buy it. They fall for it. That's got to be like a significant. And listen, I think 2% is significant of this market's mortgages have got to be completely fabricated, right? Like completely fabricated.
They aren't and they're private mortgages, that's still a big risk. And those the power sales right now are private mortgages. I've only seen a very few A lenders doing power sales.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because what you said there, Daryl, about fraudulent paperwork and things like that. One of the guys I talked to, he worked in compliance. He got fired because he was red flagging too many mortgages. Right. So what does that tell you about our banking system?
You got great listeners. But you're hearing selling all these gold nuggets he's getting from his listeners. Guys, well, if you're listening to our show and you got some dirt and you want to share it with us,
I have some interesting stuff. Drop it in the comments or email us. But I got some people telling me some interesting stuff. This just isn't the show to for some reason. There are just some crazy things people tell me that cannot be put on this show. But there's a lot of interesting things going on. You touched on it on your last episode, like fires, which I wish we had a real intern to TK, because
what are they saying about the fires, Luke?
2 years ago I said there's gonna be more fires, like get ready,
Luke. What do you got on the fires? What's going on?
Wow. Apparently it's everyone trading these assignments, which again is just beyond speculative, in my opinion.
So what, they're going in the houses and they're burning the paper that the assignment is on and leaving it in the house?
I don't know how that works. I mean, I don't know really, because when you look at, like, Better Dwelling put out that article and they were like, it was about the assignments, and you sort of think like, yeah, that makes sense. But then you think, well, how does that work? Like, if the insurance is just going to pay out and then they're just going to rebuild it, surely?
Yeah, this is
like
what I keep saying, is how does this work on a financial level to someone's benefit?
It delays the closing. And so what they're banking on, right, if this was the person doing it, they're banking on that extra year in construction that rates go down.
And they can afford it later.
Their job comes back. Their savings, right?
I got another scenario for you, TK.
They're bullish.
Maybe it's just they're just so stupid that they think that if they burn it down, it's going to be, yeah.
They don't have to buy it. Somebody thought that.
Somebody told them.
Somebody thought that. Right?
In a Toronto man accent.
What house?
Somebody in a Toronto man accent told me to burn it down, man. Right? Just burn it down,
Bam, there ain't no house for you to buy anymore, okay?
So
this is how it is.
Which, okay, so this kind of ties into, like, people are desperate, right? And it's hard to live in this country now. The cost of living has gone through the roof. You've mentioned it. You also said something about, you know, being or becoming like a third world country. I mm-hmm. share this view. I mean, I was born here. I'm pretty sure you weren't, but TK, I think, was. But I have a perspective, and this used to be a really wonderful place. And we used to be we literally bragged about our healthcare because it was fucking good healthcare, right? Like, you could get to the doctor, you could get to the specialist, you could get in the hospital. Like, this country, you said the last 15 years. I think it's more like the last 5 years. This place has gone to fucking shit. This place is literally a third world country compared to how it used to be. When you go to the I forget what it's called here, like the equivalent of the DMV. When you go to get your driver's license, like, there's light fixtures hanging, the toilet's out of order, the heat doesn't work, it smells like shit. Like, you know, it's like going in with what you expect in Mexico. And I may not be as traveled as you, but I get around sometimes. And like, our airport is a piece of shit compared to something like Mexico is even nicer, for God's sakes. Right. And you go to these places and they got nice people. The systems are working. It's not, here is just like this big fucking mess all over the place with poor people everywhere. Nobody gives a shit. People, they don't say hello. They look down. It's like, it's a real cesspool right now. You touched on it. Like, it can't only be because of Trudeau.
No. I think it's lack of incentive, and I think it will continue. I think this is the same problem the USSR had, and the reason why it failed is people had a lack of incentive to work. When people have a lack of incentive to work because, you know, they're never going to own a house, they're not having kids, they're not doing things that make them, you know, mentally happy, because we have this mental health crisis, which is a result of some of these factors as well, that you just have a lack of incentive. So nobody really wants to work. I mean, even Calgary Airport, right? You go to the international terminal, there aren't many flights going out there. It's not like Toronto. We don't have as great an airport as Toronto in terms of flights, like destinations. So it's pretty quiet. But, you know, like you say, you know, you're always delayed out of there. When you come back, you're waiting sometimes like 20 minutes for the people to come over and tow the plane into the terminal. And you're just like, what is going on here? It's not as even like it's busy. It's just that, and you see these people as well. They're just stood around. They're just stood around. And, yeah. You know, I think this is just what's happening. People, entitled. If you think about it, if you take away all the incentives of what you're going to get in the Canadian dream, which is like owning a home and all these other things, if you take away all those incentives, are you going to be enthusiastic about working anymore? No. So I don't blame these people. And I think it will continue to get worse if people, if we continue to accept the government just constantly intervening. So I think it will just get worse until you do. And maybe that's in 10, 20 years. I don't know. The way Canada's going within immigration, it will probably be a lot faster. But I think you will eventually get to where it's like slums everywhere. Like that's like my home country. So to your point, I've seen this happen in my own country in the UK. And the UK is way worse. It is in an awful state right now. The country is a train wreck, and I would never go back and live there. And the standard of living in Canada is higher than the UK, albeit they're both failing countries right now. And so Canada's doing the exact same thing that the UK was doing in the early 2000s, absolutely pumping the crap out of immigration to an extent that it cannot, like, we're not building the services, we're not building anything to take care of enough of these people. Even the targets that you alluded to, like the 250K a year, I mean, they don't even tell us the net migration figures. They just say, oh yeah, we're targeting like 500,000. Like it was over 1 million NPRs last year. That is insane. Are we building, like, did you see the 20 hospitals go up in the GTA?
Right,
because
hospitals.
40% of them are going.
Although I was at the new Vaughan Hospital a couple weeks ago, and I was thoroughly impressed with how amazing it was, but it was empty, which was crazy. But like I had an appointment, weird. They took me in, they did a CT scan, they got me out, but it was empty. But you know what was glaring on this thing? If you go here, first of all, it's like just a big ad for the big developers,
private
dinner, right?
Private donors.
Like, all private donors, all big developers. So you get there, it's like Cordellucci Hospital, right?
Yeah.
It's like the Gasparis wing over here. And it's pretty crazy. But I mean, hats off to these gentlemen because they did put a lot of their hard-earned money into building this hospital. I'm sure it wasn't like
tax break
willingly. They were probably forced to do it. Yeah. But it's such a great point. Where the hell are all the hospitals popping up that are just necessary for the amount of immigration we brought in the last year? Forget about the last.
So Nanos Research just did a poll and they said, what are the big concerns right now? And the three things were inflation, mortgages, and immigration. And so when you poll people and you look at it over the years, what their concerns are, you know, one of the big things has always been, you know, healthcare, education, right? Because those are obviously concerns Canadians should have because, as you said, what are the rewards for working so hard? Where we're like, oh, we get to free education, free healthcare, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But now their concerns are changing, obviously, because most of the younger people, that's what they're going to be concerned with, right? Mm-hmm. Older people might still be concerned with healthcare and all that kind of stuff. But really, younger people, as the millennial generation grows, we're not worried about those things like healthcare. We're not worried about those things. We just want to know that we're going to have a home. We just want to know that the price of groceries aren't going to go too far out of reach. And then immigration is now a big concern because obviously people blame immigrants. Now, you said something about the UK, and I just want to make this point. And I'm not saying it's the be all end all. Canada is nowhere near as good of a country as it was 20 years ago. It's gone downhill for the last 38 years that I've been alive.
Yeah.
It's, you know, definitely not the same thing it was 50 years ago or even probably 100 years ago. I don't know. But nowhere on earth is. There isn't any countries who are now coming out unless they were third world countries, right? Unless they were just so underdeveloped that over the last 20 years, they've crawled out of like the ashes and they got their whole own set of problems over there, you know? So like we shouldn't envy them or anything like that. So if we have to look at a scale of, you know, quality of life or anything else like that too, you know, yeah, we're not happy with the way Canada is here, but it's not like we have that many options to go to. I don't believe America is a better place to live for most people. There's a ton of jobs there. You can make more money. There's a ton of places to live that I'd rather live than Toronto there if I had a bunch of money to do it. But the majority of Americans, the majority of places there, the standard of living is pretty low.
Pretty pathetic.
So I wouldn't want to be living there either. So again, it's just like, where else? So Luke, this is the question I have for you. Where is the best place on earth to live?
Well, it depends because it's such a personal question, right?
You, can live anywhere you want to live and do the things that you need to do. You still need to work. You still need to have a normal life. You know, you didn't like, you just like, you're not a prince in some country where they're just bringing you grapes and
looking women. I'd probably go to Singapore. Where would you live?
Singapore. Good
tell
answer.
Us why.
Good answer.
Tell us why. I like Singapore, by the way. So tell us.
Survey says.
Good healthcare, low taxes, high standard of living, good economy, free, open economy. You know, it's not like an authoritarian dictatorship. I mean, you could say, a lot of people would say UAE as well, but I don't really share that. I think Dubai is fake. And I'm not a fan of like the polluted
snowing
environment
there right
there.
Now. Isn't it snowing in Dubai right now?
They're making it snow. They're like, ah, let's make it snow this month. Okay, everybody, get the winter jacket.
Wrong button. I pressed the wrong button. Sorry, everybody.
Oh, it's a hurricane. Oh, it's a hurricane.
It's time for
everybody
hats.
Back inside. Back inside.
I meant to press the rain button to make the desert green. Have you seen that shit? Have you seen the desert is green?
Oh,
now?
Yeah. I've seen that in China.
No, apparently in Saudi Arabia the desert's like green and camels are getting plowed by new rivers. Have you seen this shit?
Am I watching
the wrong stuff again?
Some channel. I'd love to see your YouTube feed.
It's not YouTube, it's TikTok, man. There's some crazy shit going on in the world. Did you see in Miami what's going on just while I'm wearing my tin hat? My tinfoil hat. No, you didn't see the 7 to 10 foot entity running around the mall that kids were shooting at?
Gotta be Bigfoot.
There's like 100 cops at the mall. Like, and they said it was just kids hitting each other with sticks. But then it comes out that it's some like fallen angel or alien or something. Get ready for 2024, man. Like, this is all the world is going
100% true. If it was on TikTok, I believe it.
I think it's 108% true, but what I think doesn't matter. What I do see though is like confusion everywhere. Like, how does somebody even pick a place to move to right now? Like, you'd pick Singapore. Would they let you in? What's Singapore like? And even if you want to move to Canada, like, it seems easy. It's not that easy.
It's not that easy.
It's not that fucking easy. Like, we have somebody who is here right now. She'd been here for 9 months. You can't get a job, man. Like, good luck getting a job, right? Because there's like the only jobs that will hire you have lineups, believe it or not. Like, people are emailing resumes left, right, and center to everybody. You go into a place, they don't even want to talk to you. They're like, just email like HR. It's like this crazy, weird place to come. And then once you actually get here, you got to figure out how you're going to stay here after. Because they don't really make that easy either, right? So
no,
you have all these people here for sure illegally, right? That don't have insurance on their cars, that like are driving pieces of shit around because they got to get to their job, right? And then on top of it, like, there isn't even jobs here for them. We say we need all these houses, but builders aren't building. So there's no construction jobs for all the people that we say are coming in to build the houses for the housing shortage. Like, what
like,
the
yeah,
hell?
Yeah, yeah. I know how to be an electrician. Do you know how many people start jobs and say that they know how to do that job? And then when they get there, it's clearly that they don't. Like, think about how many people, they're like, listen, just tell them you're an electrician. You can get into Canada.
Yeah.
Electrician.
Electrician.
Have you seen that guy on TikTok who does stuff in Calgary? He's like an inspector.
Marty?
I don't know.
He's got the beard. There's a few of them. We had one of them on the show.
Yeah, I think I watched that show as well, actually. I thought it was you guys that had him on. Yeah. But yeah, like the quality,
it's crazy.
Of the construction. Oh my God.
It's insane.
I do. Carpentry. Yeah. Flooring. Yeah. Electrical. Sure. Plumbing. No problem. When do I start?
Yeah. Pass me the hammer.
I would do. If I was moving to a new country, I'd say, listen, I do everything. What jobs are there available?
I would do the same thing. That's what I keep telling this person to do, is just go walk onto a job site and say, like, I could do anything. Just give me a shot. And then, like, if they fire you, just go do it to someone else.
I'll do it for half price.
Whatever. I'll work for free for a week, right?
Yeah. So these are the issues that we're coming across. I mean,
but these guys are forming concrete in the buildings right now. Yeah, that's okay. The problem. Like, this is the thing. They're putting the rebar inside the concrete.
We had our Q3, right? So they said that the economy contracted 1.2 or 3% or something like that in
0.1%.
Q3. In Q2, they said it went down like 0.1 or 0.2 or whatever. But then they came back and said, oh, you know what? We recalculated it. And so now it's actually, we're doing pretty good in Q2, but we went down in Q3. So therefore, it's not two consecutive quarters of contracting economies. Yeah. Like, do you think... Mm-hmm. Do you think that's being played with? Do you think this is all like intentional? Oh, yeah. Like, I'm not counting. I'm not out there figuring out how much money's going in and out the door in the economy. Like, why are they doing this to us, Luke?
They need the report to show 1.2. So can you go back and just do it right this time?
Tell them we made a mistake. It was an accountant. We hired a guy. He said he knew how counting and he was wrong. Anyways, Luke, what do you think?
1.2.
Well, it's easy when government spending is such a large driver now for the economy, because all you got to do is overshoot government spending, which is easy for the Trudeau government. And then, yeah, there's more GDP. I mean, mm-hmm. I just recently heard yesterday he spent $18 billion with a B on consultants in 2023. And that, sure. I mean, that's all corruption. In my opinion, that is just money being washed down the drain in a lot of different ways. I mean, I'm sure some of it is genuine.
Like the ArriveCan app? Was there any fraud in that deal? That looked legit.
That was only like $50 million, though.
Did you see that hearing? I am not aware of anything that happens in my company for at least the last 18 years. I am not aware of that either. No, not aware. How can that be the answer? They should have a crossbow on you when you're answering these questions. And if you...
The government appoints the judges. Sure. The government appoints the judge. It's a rigged system. I mean, I laugh because people say, oh, we're not a corrupt country. We're this democracy. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, okay, we got a minority government. Like, this guy is just siding with whatever party, whichever way the political wind blows. And I mean, I don't call that a democracy. I don't think minority government should be allowed. And then if it comes to any hearings or anything, who's appointing the judges? Trudeau. I mean, look at the Freedom Convoy hearings and everything like that. Judge was a judge, and he was obviously selected by Trudeau, and he was from Quebec. Well, that just brings down my expectations.
Right there. You say Quebec.
Nothing against the French language or anything like that. All right. Hey, just disclaimer there.
Like, listen, what's the chances really, okay, out of all the people in Canada, that we end up with two Trudeaus in the history of our country running the show, okay? Like, what are the odds of that and that we really actually voted for that, right? Mm-hmm. Like the last guy was so good. I think we should take his son out of high school teaching and make like his dad was so good.
We had no option to do this. Like, we were really low on options.
Better option, right?
Yeah. But as you were mentioning before, you said that the conservative government also, and their spending, you know, had started back in 2008 and the deficit started to grow and things were out of control. Like, even though we all know that the other guy is always going to win in Canadian politics, you know, we wear one guy out and then we all vote for the other guy and then it goes back and forth. The other guy's never better. You know, the other guy's never better, and that they really don't have as much control over the economy. They really don't have as much control over their spending. They don't have as much control over all these different parts of the government and economy as we think that they do. I don't know if it's a little bit different in the States. I don't think so. I don't think the president of the United States gets to just do whatever he wants. No, there's the Senate and everybody making decisions and voting in order to run the country properly. Yeah. But as far as the corruption point goes, I mean, our level of corruption is different than it is in other countries. Like, I remember in Thailand, we're driving on the road, we're sitting in the car, I'm in the back seat, you know, it's like five people in the back, my wife and, you know, all her, you know, Thai people there are in the car, and we're driving along the road and we get pulled over and they shine the line in the back and they say, oh, your light's out. And, you know, look, you know, he's in the back there and we got to give us 150 Thai baht to, you know, carry on and not get a ticket. So they said, oh, and they explained it all to me. I said, well, you don't want to pay a ticket. So, okay, it's $150. Your light's out. We got to go where we're going. Well, that guy radioed to his buddy, the cop down the street. And 5 minutes later, we're getting pulled over again. They said,
these guys have money.
Radioed a white guy in the back and he's got money. And so they radioed to their friend to do the same thing again. So you got to pay.
He's not wearing a seatbelt.
It happened again. So 3 times in a row, I had to pull out this, you know, like that's the type of corruption. It's so blatant. It's accepted. Everybody knows it. That exists in a lot of countries. We don't have that here.
Yes, we do. Do not, we all know it's happening.
We do not talk about our corruption look here in Canada. It's very hidden. It's very hidden. There's nobody who will admit to it. There's nobody who will say it ever happened. It's very hard to prove, but we all know what's happening. We all know that there's, oh, well, he was just a guest at my daughter's wedding. I mean, he gave us a beautiful gift. You should see it. He bought them a house.
That's fair.
It's incredible. Yeah. You know, my daughter's so lucky. These are my good friends. They support their campaigns. They do all that kind of stuff. That's how they do. They're very, I think, good at corruption and bribery and all that kind of stuff in Canadian politics because you have to. And I think it is hard to get away with anything that's too blatant. I don't believe in those.
What about the greenbelt, bro? That was pretty blatant.
It was, but look, they got caught. You know, I'm just saying, I don't believe
they got caught on that other scandal.
Bank accounts with a bunch of Canadian politicians' money in it. I don't believe that. I think that
Trudeau's got a scandal count like pages long that he's been caught for. It just nothing happens. It's crazy.
Last time he went to Jamaica,
he goes on trips. That's what he does.
He's on holidays like for a third of his.
That's his way of getting his bribes over Canada. I'm gonna go hang on that guy's island for the next couple months.
Luke put up a funny tweet. He put up a picture of Paul Lièvre, and it said, the caption was, if you don't see this guy as a con man, you're the mark.
I love that when I saw that, because there's so much like hysteria around Pierre at the moment.
Well, you just want to like him, because look at the alternative. This is what keeps happening. This is what the state of politics is in the world. It's like... Mm-hmm. You have to pick the best piece of shit possible, right? It's like there's no good option, because the good option either gets murdered or they turn him into a pedophile or a rapist, or, you know, like he's got corrupt business.
He sold hash in high school. And so you're like,
right? He didn't inhale, but he, you know, like whatever. They kill the good guys and they bring us like, would you like this complete piece of shit, or would you like this slightly less complete piece of shit? Right. But this guy's kind of funny. This is why people like Paul Lièvre, is he's coming across as real. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. If you think that he's going to make a difference, then that's your problem. But he is more likable, and he is throwing shit at Trudeau constantly, which does gain fans. I don't know if we need fans of the prime minister, though. I think we need people that think that the guy can do the job that's necessary. But like, when we actually wake up and look around at the world we live in and realize that like the votes don't really matter, the guy in charge doesn't really matter, this thing, this weird train that we're on, is just going to keep chugging along regardless of what we do. Even if we protest, they're going to take us out, right? Like that, like, I don't know about you, but I was watching that trucker convoy so intently because I knew how important that was going to be. How we behaved as a government, as a nation, as a population, dictated the future of this country. And what did we do? We fucking caved. We caved like a bunch of pussies, because they came down on us super hard. And everybody, I didn't do a fucking thing. I was watching on 8 different channels on YouTube. That's what I did, right?
Same.
Hoping that somebody was going to do it. And what did I see? I saw them trample a lady on a wheelchair with a horse, okay? And I was like, holy shit, did that just really happen? This is Canada. Like, this couldn't have just really happened. Is this all really happening? Did they just really put these people in jail, take their money? Like, did this all really happen in the country I grew up in? And like, this is what we're dealing with now. And guess what? Most people don't even remember that it fucking happened. Right? Most people weren't glued to the TV. Most people didn't see what happened. Most people didn't realize how important that time was in Canadian history.
In the world stage.
In the world stage. And in, because now, like, what did we do? We all collectively bent over and lubed up for them to do whatever the hell they're going to want to do now. Right? What's going to stop Trudeau from making a rule like Xi Jinping that he's just going to be here for longer? There's no vote. Look at this comedy in the House of Commons. They're just like, yeah, like it's a comedy routine. It's like they're both saying like, well, he's a drama teacher. And he's like, well, he's only been in politics for his whole career. And it's like, you're an idiot. No, you're an idiot. And you got this new guy standing in the front going like, I can't really control this shit. I don't know what to do. Like, it's a clown show. It's a circus right now. And we have to figure out how to live it underneath this craziness. How do we do this? How do we do this, guys?
Man, you know, when that trucker convoy happened, that was when I said, I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here. And this year we're actually leaving Canada. And it's like, you know what? That was a turning point for me. I mean, the weather had been like getting at me because Calgary is like 8 months winter. But when that happened, I was just like, man, you know, and then Bill C-11. And I mean, they're trying to regulate everything. And it's like you say, like, I mean, the other person, he says he's going to be so much better, but is he really? I don't necessarily believe that at all. He's a populist, so he's trying to conform to the view that everybody wants, and that's you know, gonna work. That's definitely gonna work. I think there is some hope in some places, though. Look at Argentina. But I would say also look at and Argentina is gonna go through a lot of pain now as a result of Milei. But the thing is, look how much pain it had before. Like, look at the threshold. They had to take it to hyperinflation. And I know a lot of people say that'll never happen in Canada. And I would emphasize that it's not going to happen for a long time, but it will most definitely happen. I mean, what does $100 buy you now compared to 20 years ago? It's slowly happening. It's just that people do not realize what's causing it, and it is the government. And I think the problem is we all look at the government to solve all our problems. And in the past, when times were good, like in the 50s and the 60s, the golden years of America and Canada, if you look at what was going on, we let the free market fix problems. But now it's just like the government... It's corruption.
They create most of them.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I got a video coming next week about this, but I've been doing a lot of research into it. And like, when you look at how much CEOs make, and it was Jeremy Grantham, not me, that got me onto this, but Jeremy Grantham talks a lot about this, is look at the growth in CEO pay. It's all the wealth is concentrated at the top. So you're going to get corruption because... wealth is power. It can be converted into power because these people are corruptible. And most of the time, it's just name your price when it comes to government officials. And if you look at who's propping up Pierre's campaign, I mean, again, how can you trust the guy when you look at all the big donors are all the same oligarchs that donate to Trudeau as well? I mean, put yourself in his shoes, put yourself in that guy's shoes. Everybody who's funding you, are you then going to turn around and turn on those guys? But I don't think so. You might.
Why the hell do we even have it like that? Like, why do you need funding from donors? Why can't we just pick guys and like say, you know what? These guys get the resources they need to do a campaign across the country. Like, but do it on Zoom for fuck's sakes. I don't need to shake your hand and see you at like the opening of a plant. Like, let's just like... pick a guy based on, like, I don't know.
The Elections Act has all that stuff covered. I think that there's a lot of things in there. It's just like what Luke is saying, though. If you get to the limits that you're allowed to get to through the means of these major donors, then, yeah, it's going to be really hard for you not to, you know, accept a phone call from them when you're in power. It's going to be really hard for you not to consider their needs when you need to make a decision.
But the thing is like that what you're allowed to give legally, like on a check to them, is such a small amount that anybody that wants to have any clout will give money to everybody that's running, and it doesn't make a difference. And now they have that same kind of arrangement with everybody, right?
That's
so it doesn't matter who
the way
wins,
that the act is, yeah.
But that's why it's so stupid. Why the fuck do we get to give, hey, buddy, here, I support you, right? Like, what else is it, right? What else is the donation for?
Well, they just want it. It's way the way democracy works is maybe there's a guy out there who doesn't have any money, but he would be the best person for us. And so if a bunch of people do support him and show their support by donating to him, it means this guy's obviously got something to say that could be worthwhile. So
yeah, but he smoked a joint in high school. So
I think it's regulated
completely.
I don't think that the donors are as important. It's easy to prove. That's why we can like look at the donor list and stuff. It's the other things, you know, it's the inviting you to my cottage in Muskoka for the weekend, letting you use my boat. Yeah.
What's your wire transfer information?
If you're just a regular person and you're in politics and you're worked hard, you know, you were an MP or you were, you know, a minister maybe. And now all of a sudden you're in a really, you know, prominent position and you're getting invited to some like billionaire lifestyle type of events, that feels good. You like that.
That
makes you kind of, ooh, yeah, lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Ooh, this person, he was talking about how he just, you know, built this condo building and why his company is now looking at, you know, mining gold.
And that he has me on camera with an underage girl smoking crack. Just happened to mention that too at the party.
But those are all these like really like alluring things. So you don't even, as a really wealthy person, you don't even need to give them the underage woman and illegal drugs. You can just bring them into this lifestyle and they like it. It feels good. You feel special. I know people in like federal government positions and stuff like that. They have money, but there's another level and they love talking about their friends who are at those other levels. They love being able to rub shoulders with those other people. It makes them feel good. It makes them feel special. You don't even need to bribe them. You don't even need to give them anything. You just invite them into your world. And all of a sudden I'm one of them. And that feels really good. So it's a whole big sea of corruption. It's a weird thing. Luke's leaving. Last question here, Luke, because we're going to be at the end of the show here soon, is if you leave Canada, when you leave Canada,
when,
what is the Market Mania channel going to look like?
I was thinking the same
outside
thing.
Of the country.
Don't tell anybody. Just keep doing it.
I don't even know at this point. I haven't even thought that far ahead. It'll probably be much of the same because I believe there needs to be independent voices that are talking about what's going on in Canada. I'm still going to be in Canada. I'll just be reporting on it from outside of Canada. So I plan to leave in the fall of this year when our lease is up here, all being well. And then I'm just going to travel around multiple different countries trying to figure out if any of them are better or worse.
Try Singapore.
Curacao.
I can't afford that. I can't afford Singapore. You said that what would your place if any object, I would go Singapore. Yeah. But I can't afford
Singapore's expensive. Singapore,
where would I go?
You said you like a bridge in California, under a bridge, isn't that what you were saying?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
if you could pick a bridge, it would be in California.
If I could pick anywhere, I really like Santa Barbara. In the States, right? So it's not like I would want to go there, you know what I mean? It's just like as far as all the places I've ever visited, otherwise I haven't been to, you know, all these other places I'd like to try. I'd go to Singapore, I'd check it out, I'd check out Malaysia, I'd check out a few other Asian countries. Maybe I'd like them.
I had Belize at the top of my list for a while. I really wanted to move there, but then somebody told my wife that a couple of Canadians got killed there and that ruined everything. So that can't happen anywhere. There can't be murders at all. But now that we've been to Curacao, that place is at the top of the list by a landslide.
Unfortunately, I'm going to be the guy who says Canada's at the top of my list.
Oh, TK.
Vacationing and all these other places sounds great, but just coming back home to me,
coming back
is
home
the place to
shovel,
be.
To wipe the car off.
And Luke, the door will always be open here for you. If you decide to come back later on after you travel the world and you say all these other countries suck too, the door will be open here for you, you know. And Daryl,
he's got the passport. Like he's keeping the health care. He's keeping like the benefits.
Gotta be 6 months a year.
He's coming to get his medication when he needs it, right? But like otherwise, he's out of here. I don't blame you. I want to do the exact same fucking thing. If my wife's on a pretty crazy medication that we're very lucky to get for a very, very low price of zero, for now anyways, but like if we moved, this is like refrigerated crazy stuff. Like, so we have to move somewhere where we could have it like sent to us from here because they won't send it directly there. So we actually have to stay citizens just for her medication, funny enough, because that would bankrupt wow. most people to pay for this medication, which is just another great thing about Canada, because it probably costs like 18 cents to make the stuff, but they mm-hmm. charge like thousands of dollars a vial. It's vile what they charge per vial. I guess that's how they came up with the name. All right, TK. Always a pleasure. Luke, thank you for remembering to join us today. We appreciate it. I'm glad I sent you that email.
We appreciate it. Yeah.
Always a pleasure. It. Always.
And we wish you much success on
much
your show.
Much more success. Jesus.
Continue to do what you're doing, man.
Same to you guys, man.
People are listening. Just do us a favor. Like, mention us on your show or something. Give us a little bit of sub action over here. Give us a little bit of entrails. A little bit of crumbles.
I was on the Canadian Real Estate Show the other day, and...
Don't make fun of us.
Something like that.
Yeah, I will do, man.
No, you don't have to do it. You don't have to. But if you do, we'd love it. It'd be great.
I have such
no
a
pressure.
Bad memory, and I get carried away during...
I'll email you. I'll email you every day.
He gets fired up.
I'll email you every day. Mr. Luke, it was a pleasure. Enjoy your travels. Good luck to you. We'll have to have you on maybe after you move. That'd be pretty cool. See what's going on with you. Maybe before.
Sounds good, yeah.
Love watching your stuff.
Market Mania. If you haven't checked out Luke's channel, check it out. If you haven't liked, commented, and subscribed on our channel yet, just ask yourself, look in the mirror and ask yourself, what am I really doing with my life?
Yeah. How important is this sub for me? Really? Like, it's like it's gold, TK. And don't forget about the Clips channel, the juggernaut of the show. The Clips channel. Check it out. Everybody, TK.
Sayonara.